This is The Sweeper, the global football podcast with the best worldwide news and stories from the beautiful game, with Lee Wingate and Paul Watson.
On this episode of The Sweeper, we talk about Ireland involvement in the Copa Chile, terrible pitches and player names in Peru, and the Sudanese Giants set to play in Tanzania next season. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Sweeper, the world football podcast that tells stories from all 211 FIFA members and beyond. It's always exciting for us on the show when we get to talk about a country we've never previously mentioned. And in part two, we're going to be touching on Sudan for the first time. But first up in part one, let's head on over to South America to talk about the domestic cup competitions in three countries on the west coast of the continent: Chile, Ecuador and Peru. Let's start with the Copa Chile, Paul. What's the news?
Well, exciting news that we have a team from Juan Fernandez Island taking part in the first round of the Chilean Cup. Now, you may not know where Juan Fernandez Island is. That's pretty normal. They are islands off the coast of Chile, so they are incredibly remote, some of the most remote islands there are, in a way. It's an archipelago, Juan Fernandez, of three main islands, one of which is called Robinson Crusoe, which is a great name. And yeah, they are taking part in this cup in the central north zone first round.
Yeah, this is an incredible story. So this is 670 kilometers off the coast of Chile. And not only is the game taking place there, so which I think is quite nice, you know, it's not just a game involving the Juan Fernandez Islands, but it's taking place there. It's between the Juan Fernandez representative team and Santiago Wanderers, who I believe are the oldest football club in Chile and also historically one of the most successful. So it's a hammer draw as well.
It really is. Yeah, they're playing against a second division team. So, you know, second tier team in the Chilean system. So it's going to be an enormous test for them. It's one of the biggest David versus Goliath ties you can imagine, because the population is only 900 in Juan Fernandez Island. So you're looking at a tiny, tiny club playing against, yeah, this traditional kind of big club in Chile. So it's a fantastic, fantastic game in prospect.
We've talked before about the best routes to play football, and surely going to play for an island that's got 900 people on it, probably only half of whom are men, is an absolutely great route to get into football. So it seems like a Paul Watson sort of mission. I also like the fact that rather than just throwing them in the deep end, they are actually sending out a famous Chilean coach to coach the representative team ahead of this first round tie. The man in question is Jorge Garces, who was actually the Chilean national team coach for a brief spell in 2001. And they sent him out 2 months before the tie to prepare the team. So it's not just you can take part, it's that they're really trying to sort of get them up to speed and standard for the competition.
Which is, as you say, really important that they're doing that, really nice that they're doing that. And it reminded me of what happened with Rapa Nui. So Rapa Nui, or Easter Island, as it's referred to sometimes abroad, they took part in the Chilean Cup in 2009. We've talked about this briefly before, in a game that was called the Match of the Century, where they ended up drawing Colo-Colo, you know, the absolute giants of Chilean football. And what I think they did for this one was they sent over a coach. They sent over Miguel Angel Gamboa, former Chilean striker. He played for them in the 1982 World Cup. And I think they sent him over to Rapa Nui to prepare that team for this game. I don't know how long he had. And, you know, it's incredible. If you go online, you can find highlights of the game. You can also see the Rapa Nui haka, the traditional dance that they did before the game. And it's an amazing thing to witness, but this really reminded me of that game. One thing I only learned really recently is that in the game against Colo-Colo, Rapa Nui's goalkeeper got injured really, really early on. So actually, Colo-Colo were playing against a 15-year-old goalkeeper who had come on for Rapa Nui, who did an amazing job, really. But what a thing to grow up on this tiny island, you know, and end up playing against Colo Colo at the age of 15. It's quite something, really.
And they only lost 4-0, which I thought was very respectable. I did also see that the Juan Fernandez Islands were actually looking to follow in Rapa Nui's footsteps very soon after that game in 2009. I think they actually wanted to be invited in 2010. But then a series of pretty negative events took place. They first had a tsunami that hit the islands. And then a year after that, a Chilean Air Force plane crashed between the islands, killing everyone on board. And so I think they had a few years where they just had other things to deal with. This idea got shelved and pushed back and pushed back. And now finally, 15 years after the last time one of the islands was invited to take part, it's now happening again. So I think it's been in the works for a while.
I think it has. The past results for Juan Fernandez Islands that are listed do not give you a lot of hope. I think there used to be a game between Rapa Nui and Juan Fernandez representative. And this game used to take place, I guess, fairly semi-regularly at least. And they played in 1996, but the most recent time they played, I think, was 2000. Rapa Nui won 16-0. I mean, obviously, that's 24 years ago, so a lot could have changed. I imagine the playing staff have changed entirely, but it gives you a sense of the scope of how big a task this is to try and even compete with a team that are a proper second-tier team. I really hope they they give it a good go, and I really hope they have a great day.
When Colo Colo went to Rapa Nui all those years ago, they flew because they have quite regular flight connections between Rapa Nui and the mainland of Chile. But in this case, it's not going to be by plane that they're getting there, because the planes that can land on Robinson Crusoe Island have room for between 8 to 12 passengers, which means to get the players, the staff, and all of the Chilean FA and anyone else that's going from the mainland, they would need to provide around 10 to 15 planes, which is not really feasible, and the costs would be huge. So instead, the Chilean Navy is helping them get there. They have got a ship called the Achilles, which will take 1.5 days to sail to the islands and bring everyone to the game.
That's incredible. What an amazing thing that is. We will just put this out there again. The Coupe de France is delivering this. Chilean Cup here stepping up to the mark. Surely it's time we had an equivalent for the English FA Cup and we had a team from St. Helena or the Falkland Islands, because it wouldn't be that much more difficult than this, to be honest. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, we'd love to see it. Also, a very niche award, but I'd previously given the award for the best method of transportation to a domestic cup tie to Barcelona for when they took helicopters to the enclave of Ceuta in the Copa del Rey. I think that was last season or the season before last. But now we've got a new one, because I think the Navy boat that's going to the Juan Fernandez Islands scoops up the prize for me. We just don't see enough boat trips for football matches anymore. Used to get them a lot back in the early World Cup days, but you don't get them now.
That's very true. I mean, I think you get an honourable mention for, you remember we talked about the Indonesian derby where one of the teams was going to the game in a tank. We had some slightly disappointed messages from listeners who believed it was like a tank with a gun on it. You know, they thought they were going literally in a sort of, but I think it was just like an armored car, you know, like a sort of bulletproof car. It wasn't like they were literally traveling at 3 miles an hour on a tank that could go through landmines, you know. but that was quite good too.
Were we accused of misrepresenting the tank?
We had at least one message that was someone saying, you said they traveled in a tank and they actually traveled in an armored sort of SUV. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, it was called a tank, but I mean, they weren't literally crawling down the road on a sort of military vehicle.
Let's move up the South American coast to Ecuador. We're going to talk about the Copa Ecuador next. Do you know what is the strange thing about the Copa Ecuador, Paul?
I do not know what the strange thing is.
The strange thing is that there isn't one at the moment.
that's the shortest segment in Sweeper history. Well, let's move on then.
They had one before the pandemic. It got cancelled for 2 seasons. They brought it back in 2022. And then it got cancelled again last year because of a dispute with the TV broadcaster, I think. So they're talking about bringing the Copa Ecuador back this season. It looks like it's going to happen. And so I thought, ahead of the competition potentially returning, I would tell you about what happened in the 2022 Copa Ecuador, because there were 3 things that caught my attention and they were all just very sweeper. So the first one is there was a first round tie between 2 teams called Libertad and Bonita Banana, So in English, freedom and beautiful banana. And these two teams served up a 42-shot penalty shootout, which Beautiful Banana went on to win
1918. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's brilliant. Every aspect of that's brilliant.
The second one, we've talked before about Joe Armas, the very young coach who went to Europe as a youngster to study coaching. He studied with various different clubs and on the side was working as a bricklayer to finance his stay abroad. He then moved back to Ecuador, where he sent his CV out to 300 different clubs in the hope of finding a job. Eventually, third division in Imbabura, who were in a very bad way, gave him the opportunity. And Joe Armas has since steered them to two promotions to the top flight. But in addition to that rise up the ranks in the league system, he also was responsible for one of the biggest shocks in the history of the Copa Ecuador, because in 2022, Imbabura knocked out the holders and one of the most successful clubs in the competition's history, Liga de Quito. So Joe Armas at 26 years old, amazing stuff.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. 26 as well. Yeah. Fair play to him. That is amazing trajectory he's on.
Finally, the semi-finals of the competition in 2022 were actually a four-team group, with the top two teams qualifying for the final.
That feels like making hard work of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And also because they didn't just play each other once, it was like home and away games. So it was a six-game group.
I mean, that must take some of the magic away a little bit from the fact that then they just go through to play someone they've already played. Yeah, that's a horrible system. I'd be really interested to know why anyone thought that was a good idea.
If the Brazil World Cup in 1950 taught us anything, it's that you don't have a group stage for the latter stages of the competition. Because I think at that World Cup, for the final round, there was just a four-team group. And it just so happened that the final round of fixtures between Brazil and Uruguay did actually equate to a final, because it was between those two teams. But they never went back to that format. They sort of scrapped it afterwards. And yeah, I just don't think group stages really work for what should be like a final or a semi-final.
No, it just takes away any of the drama, doesn't it, really? We've always said a thing that people forget when they're trying to make money out of tournaments too is that the value of something is in the scarcity. So what makes finals exciting is that there's one of them. But if you've already had that game already played once or even twice before in that tournament, it just loses a bit of value, really.
Finally, in this segment about South American domestic cups, we're going to talk about the Copa Peru. But the Copa Peru is not exactly what it sounds like, is it, Paul?
No, it's not. So there was a clip of two teams playing football on what looks like a meadow, and they are struggling to play. The ball's getting embedded in sort of clumps of bushes, and it just looks absolutely impossible that a game of football can take place at all. And people were saying this is the Copa Peru. And so obviously your mind goes to, well, this is effectively like England's FA Cup. And this is crazy that these two teams are playing on that pitch. So actually, it was quite interesting when you dig down, you find that, yes, it is the Copa Peru, but the Copa Peru isn't actually what we think of it as being. I think it's a fair way of saying B, right?
Yeah. So the main cup competition in Peru is the Copa Bicentenario, which is contested by teams from the top two divisions. So I guess that's more like what the English League Cup is, if you're looking for an equivalent. But the Copa Peru, as far as I understand it, is a competition for amateur clubs that offer the winner and the runner-up promotion to the nation's professional divisions. So it's quite cool because it's like a route to professional football outside of the league system, but it's definitely not what it was being labelled as online when clips of this particular game started circulating.
No, and it reminds me a little bit of there was a tournament in Mongolia that when I had a club there, we won what was effectively could have been called the Mongolian Cup, but it was a similar thing. It was in lieu of a third division, you won this like very amateur cup in order to then qualify for the second division of the Mongolian system. So we could say we'd won this Mongolian Cup, but what we'd effectively won was a game against, you know, some guys with sort of beer bellies in the final. Yeah, and if you look at, sure enough, if you look at the teams that have won the Copa Peru, these are not the big names of Peruvian football. One of them, brilliantly, in 2006, is called Total Clean.
The two teams that were playing in the game that you mentioned on this very bobbly pitch in Cusco, they are called FC Cebolitas and Empresa Comunal, which is Spring Onions versus Community Enterprise.
It's so funny because I saw Cebolitas and I had my Italian head on and I thought, well, that sounds like onion to me. So it does genuinely mean spring onions, does it?
Yeah. I did look it up because I thought it was similar to the Spanish word for onion. It means spring onions. We had a pretty funny incident back in this competition in 2014. Do you want to tell the story of the cattle?
Ah, yes. So a game between Minsa and Espresso Inambari was stopped because of a pitch invasion from cattle. This is back 10 years ago, 2014, which doesn't happen every day, does it, in a cup competition? I mean, that's an example of some of the mayhem that can take place at lower level football in Peru. What I also should mention is that a goal in this competition was scored after 3 seconds. Which could be a record, I think. There's a game being played between Tiro 28, or whatever 28 would be in Spanish. You can probably tell me, Lee, against Villa Social. And they were playing in the Cup of Peru. And someone shoots from the kickoff, and it just goes straight in. And the goal is timed at 3 seconds, which, I don't know, has to be one of the fastest goals in history. A guy called Edson Lopez scores it.
You can't get faster than scoring straight from kickoff, can you? So, yeah, that's pretty amazing. While we're on the topic of Peru, shall we just finish off this little segment with the story of probably the worst footballer name in history?
Yes. So you may well be talking about Osama Bin Laden. To give him his full name, Osama Bin Laden Jimenez Lopez.
Right. So, yeah, not that that makes it any better. This is spelt with a V rather than a B just because of Spanish pronunciation, I think. But it's essentially, he is named after Osama bin Laden. And he has a brother called, is it Saddam Hussein his brother's called?
His brother is called Saddam Hussein, yeah. He has a Spanish spelling, I'm told. So he has one fewer D in Saddam and one fewer S in Hussein. But yeah, his brother is called Saddam Hussein. And This is pretty good. Additionally, apparently his father planned on naming his third child George Bush, but it turned out to be a girl, so he couldn't.
Oh, but he could, Paul. The girl is called Georgia Bush.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah. And what's amazing is, so this guy, Bin Laden, you know, he's 21. He's playing at a pretty decent level. He plays for Union Comercio, which is... I think they're a top flight team. So, you know, he's a decent footballer. And he was asked about this name. And so, you know, someone said, "What? Why would you be called this?" And he said, there's a person called Hitler in Peru. And then he says, he's obviously digging a little bit at this point. He says, Jesus saved the world. And there are lots of Jesuses out there who do harm. Because there's an Osama who killed people, I don't think there has to be a law about the name. But it draws a lot of attention from what I see.
Hmm.
Poor guy. I mean, like, you just got to feel sorry for him because... whatever he does, it's going to just massively always be the first thing anyone ever mentions, isn't it? But it, yeah, to try and liken it to the fact lots of people are called Jesus or Jesus is, that's a bit of a leap, I think.
Yeah, I did try and have a think of parallels of people in the football world who are named after historic villains. It's not quite the same, but the current Monaco coach, Adi Hütter, is Austrian and called Adolf, and he has abbreviated his name to Adi, presumably to avoid that association.
Yes. Is it? How common is that in, you know, in modern day Austrian Germany? I'd imagine the name Adolf is relatively rare, is it? Is it not?
Yes, I can give you actually specifics on this. Since 1984, there have been only 85 people given that name. So, I mean, that's still 85 is quite a lot, but it's obviously a lot less than it would have been. But I still think that, like, there's obviously a difference between being given the first name and then, in this particular case in Peru, being given the full name of somebody like Osama bin Laden. So, yeah. Quite crazy.
Dreadful. And it will, I suppose it will help with the media circus if there's any way to make a positive about. But to be honest, it may well hold him back. I can imagine it wouldn't be particularly well received in quite a lot of places to be called Osama bin Laden. It's a weird thing. And as I say, the real sad thing is he's obviously a very talented player, but his entire career now is going to be somewhat overshadowed by his name. And that just doesn't seem particularly fair.
Let's round off our South American segment there. We'll take a quick break and then come back to talk about the Sudanese club that will play in Tanzania next season and other teams that participate in the leagues of other countries. Welcome back to part two of this Sweeper podcast. And as I alluded to before the break, we're going to start by talking about Sudan. And then after that, we'll branch out a little bit and talk about clubs all over the world that are playing in the leagues of different countries for various reasons. But first of all, what is going on in Sudan at the moment?
A very horrible conflict is going on in Sudan, and thousands have been killed, millions displaced. You know, this brutal war is raging on and sport is suspended. You know, sport becomes the least of anyone's problems and sort of it's pushed to the back burner. So sport's been suspended in Sudan. What's really nice, I think, is that Sudanese club Al Hilal have been allowed to come and play in Tanzania's football league from this coming August when the season starts. You know, it's being billed as something that will just give at least some sort of positive outlet for people in Sudan. It's not going to solve the huge, horrible problems in Sudan, but it's a thing to give a bit of light, I think. Al Hilal will play in Tanzania. They won't actually be able to win the league, I believe. Their games will all be treated as friendly fixtures, but it just allows them to keep playing, which, you know, obviously for the club is important on a football level. But more than that, you know, I think it's something about having the distraction of football and all the kind of good stuff that comes along with that, that, you know, this record title winning side from Sudan will continue to represent them abroad while Sudan hopefully at some point comes back to a position of stability and peace.
Do we know why it is that they have been chosen? Because obviously this is to give people a reason to be happy, something to watch and enjoy. But why is it only this particular club that have been invited?
I think the reason Al Hilal have been invited is because they were the champions in 2021-22. That was the last season that was completed. So they are the Sudanese champions. They're also the record title holders in Sudan. They've won 29 titles. But I think the main reason is, as we say, they are the reigning champions. And so there's a sense to them sort of being allowed this format to compete in.
It's quite interesting as well that Tanzania is the country that they'll be participating in, because usually when we see clubs participate in the league of other countries, they're usually neighbours. And in this case, they're not neighbours. They're 2,500 kilometres apart. So I wonder why this was chosen. Maybe there were just no other alternatives in the region, or maybe Tanzania just came forward and offered. But it's quite surprising given the distance, I think.
That struck me as well. You know, it is interesting that Tanzania would be chosen. It's a very competitive and strong league, Tanzania. I think on a football level, that might be quite a good level for them to pit themselves at. It could just be simply that they were looking for the nearest league that also had a sort of stable political situation for them to play in, but maybe found that they weren't welcome in some of those leagues. I guess Ethiopia would have been the nearest, would it? Probably. I'm not totally sure what the football situation in Central African Republic is. I also don't know about the political sensibilities, or the, you know, maybe there's something to do with the conflict in Sudan that means certain countries wouldn't allow this. I have to admit, I'm not an expert at all on the internal politics, but you're right, it is interesting they're traveling such a great distance to play.
Who do you usually think of in the category of clubs playing in the leagues belonging to other countries? Which names sort of spring to mind for you in Europe, first of all?
The one that we talk about quite a bit is FC Vaduz, the Liechtenstein team who play in the Swiss Challenge League. They always pop into your head as an obvious one. If this was sort of a game show where you had to name the one most people go for, you'd probably think maybe Toronto FC, I guess, the team that you watched relatively recently playing in another country. But I imagine there are some more obscure ones out there.
Yeah, I mean, it is worth touching on some of the ones that we've talked about before, like Vaduz, who you mentioned, because it's just such a strange scenario. So only 7 football clubs in Liechtenstein, they all play in the Swiss pyramid, but they also pay to be in the Swiss pyramid. So it actually costs Vaduz 1.4 million Swiss francs per year to play in the Super League, and around 500,000 francs to play in the Challenge League, the Swiss second division, which is where they are now. It's a bit like the situation with Sudan and Tanzania. Even if they were to win the Super League, They cannot be named the champions of Switzerland and cannot qualify for Europe through the league. So it's a very bizarre situation.
I didn't realise either of those things. I mean, I guess I'd never really thought it through. I didn't realise they paid. And it never really occurred to me that, say, it was to happen, and obviously it's quite a long way off, but if they were to become champions of Switzerland, they wouldn't be champions of Switzerland. Hmm. I guess they get their place in Europe pretty much every year, clockwork, by winning the Liechtenstein Cup, which is the, you know, that's their route into Europe from Liechtenstein. But so their league play is, in a weird way, like playing a series of friendlies in terms of how it's viewed by the powers that be, right? Although they can be relegated and they can be promoted, can't they, from the Challenge League, I believe. So they would be allowed to go into the top flight.
Yeah, that's all fine. It's just they can't win the league and they can't qualify for Europe through the league. But that means, in a real quirky fact here, Liechtenstein has the longest run-up to the Champions League of any country in European football. Because even if you're in San Marino or Gibraltar, you can theoretically, by winning your domestic league, get into the Champions League the following season, provided you win your qualifiers. Whereas in Liechtenstein, you have to win the cup, then you get into the Conference League. The only way you can get into the Europa League is by winning the Conference League. And then the only way you can get into the Champions League is by winning the Europa League. So you basically have like a 3-year run-up, theoretically, to get into the Champions League if you're in Liechtenstein.
That's an amazing fact. I can guarantee you there's someone who's done this on Football Manager as well.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, for sure. Worth giving a mention to one famous example that you didn't mention originally, Monaco. I think probably quite a lot of people would say Monaco. They have won the French League 8 times and won the Cup on 5 occasions. So they can actually be champions of France. That's probably one that most people are familiar with, I think.
Probably fewer people are familiar with the fact they do have a national football team who have competed in non-FIFA tournaments, like the kind of CONEFA World tournaments. They also have played against the Vatican in the past. Brilliantly, they played against the Vatican and they had a player called Thierry Vatrican.
Nothing more to add to that, but I do like it. Monaco also holds the, again, this is a completely pointless fact, but I presume this is why some of the listeners tune in. Monaco holds the record for being the closest top flight European football stadium to an international land border. It is 14 meters away from France. I measured this on Google, but I have actually been to the Stade Louis II, not to see a game, but just to walk around it. And the thing that strikes me is how closely packed together everything is in Monaco. Like, space is an absolute premium, and they've got this massive football stadium, and yet you regularly see that it's almost kind of empty whenever they play Ligue 1 matches.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I'd never really thought about that. The crowds are really pretty dreadful, aren't they? Do you think there isn't really a population there that feel Monaco's football team represents them? Or I don't know. It's really interesting because, you know, it's not a huge place, but you'd have thought a club of that size, European football-wise, would do a lot better.
Mm, yeah, it's a good question. They do have quite a good derby, like the sort of French Riviera derby against Nice. So I presume the crowds are probably a bit better for that one. But generally, I think quite low attendance. Other ones in Europe that are probably worth a mention, FC Andorra climbing through the ranks in Spain. Current Welsh champions, TNS, are actually based in Shropshire in England. That's where the stadium is anyway.
Ah, that's very interesting. I have actually heard that accusation thrown at them that they're not a Welsh club, but I didn't realise there's actually a geographical... So they play within England. I should have known that.
We've also got Victor San Marino in the promotion race for Serie C this season. Derry City in the Republic of Ireland. There are also a couple of really interesting ones around the world as well. Are you familiar with the story of DPMM in Brunei?
No, I'm not. I'd love to know what that stands for as well.
I do not have a clue what that stands for, but they perfectly fit into this category. They left the Brunei League to join the Malaysian second tier in 2005. They were promoted and then they finished third in the Malaysian top flight. Then they left that in 2009 to join the Singapore S League, where they have become champions twice in 2015 and 2019. And then, and I actually thought this was an April Fool's joke, they were rumoured to be interested a few years ago in switching to Indonesia. And I was thinking, come on, how many different leagues do you want to play in? But it turns out that was a genuine one because there was some sort of age and foreign player restrictions that came into force in Singapore. So they were looking to move again. as it is, they've stayed in Singapore, but they've played in their own league, Malaysia, and now Singapore.
That's very interesting. And a part of me wonders if this kind of thing will become more prevalent in the future of football, because I think we've spoken before about the possibility of mid-sized leagues joining up with other leagues, or whether there are clubs that will want to, you know, defect from one league to another. Obviously, there's been talk for just generations of Celtic and Rangers trying to join the English league system, and whether that ranges from various levels of seriousness to, you know, it can just be nonsense, or it could be actually something that's been looked into. But it is interesting to think how many times a club may think, actually, on a simply footballing level, they would do better out of making a move. And whether this is going to be something we see more of, I don't know.
It's not always clubs moving, though. You sometimes get instances of new clubs just starting. And that brings me on nicely to the last example I have, which is Auckland FC in Australia. So we've already got one New Zealand club in the A-League, that is Wellington Phoenix. But a brand new club is starting, I think it's next season in the A-League, and that is going to be Auckland FC. So there's going to be two clubs from New Zealand playing in the Australian A-League.
That is very interesting indeed. And again, because you've got Auckland City, who were in the Club World Cup by dint of being the OFC champions, weren't they? They won the OFC Champions League, did they not? So you kind of have this option there. New Zealand's in a fascinating position because you have clubs there who have the option of being a very big fish in a small pond in OFC, or are they going to try and go over to Australia? And Australia in itself has gone from OFC to AFC. And again, both appeal. It's a really interesting sort of middle ground.
I think that would be the only game in the world from next season, the only example of a match taking place between two clubs based in a different continent to the league they play in.
Wow.
Footballing continent, that is, because as you say, they're AFC and OFC. So there's crazy examples of this all over the world, but I do find them fascinating. If you can think of any others that you want to tell us about that we've omitted from this section, then of course, send us a mail to sweeperpod@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this segment on football clubs playing in other countries, there is more where that came from. We will, if we get 7 new signups to our Patreon prior to the next episode on Wednesday, the 17th of April, write a special blog post about clubs all over the world playing in leagues in other countries. So if you'd like to read that and are enjoying our world football coverage more broadly, please do consider supporting us. A lot of the work like this that we do is extremely research intensive, and the more support we get, the more time we can afford to dedicate to interesting topics like this. So to sign up, go to patreon.com/sweeperpod. We've also got a bonus segment out right now that you can listen to on Patreon with a question and answer session. We've actually already done that before recording this main pod. What was your favorite question that you were asked, Paul?
Probably the best question was about my hopes and dreams. No one's asked me about that, I guess, since I was about 7. So I really appreciated that. It was like a therapy session.
Very nice. Yeah. So to hear Paul's therapy session, we also talked about how we make the pod and how we research our stories. And we also talked about our encounters with wildlife at football matches. So if that sounds interesting, hop on over to Patreon. And lastly for today, we announced on our last pod that you could win a trip to Bhutan to see Thimphu City, thanks to their kit manufacturer, Icarus. Check out the pod from Wednesday, the 3rd of April for more. But briefly, Paul, how has the first week of the competition gone, and how can people still enter if they want to?
The first week of the competition has gone very well. I think a lot of people are excited by the possibility of winning this once-in-a-lifetime trip to Bhutan. What's very interesting, though, is although the shirt sales have been very good, certainly for a Bhutanese football club standards, the odds are still pretty good for you to win a trip to Bhutan if you do fancy buying a shirt. So if you are interested in buying a beautiful Bhutanese football shirt that will certainly turn some heads at five-a-side, do get involved. And I've got to say, your odds are not awful for you to be going to Bhutan later in this year.
Absolutely. You can do that at IcarusFC.com. So do head on over there and get your Thimphu City shirt. Icarus have also kindly agreed to give us another beautiful shirt from their collection to give away to one of our patrons prior to the next episode. It belongs to one of their clubs, FC Sametex, who are currently top of the Ghanaian Premier League. Did you know that, Paul? I didn't know that.
I've got to admit. FC Sametex, you say?
Yeah, but they've got a lovely shirt. It's very sleek, color scheme of white, green, and black. And yeah, it just looks lovely. I'll actually put a link to that particular shirt in the episode description. So if you're curious what we're giving away, you'll be able to see it. But it's a very sleek and nice shirt. I was going to ask you to describe it, but the last time I asked you to describe a shirt on the pod, you just said it was yellow. So I thought...
I was thinking exactly that. I thought he's not going to ask me to describe it because I'll just do such a bad job. What I will say is go on Icarus's club shop and just have a look, because they do not make dull shirts. You will see some of them you'll love, maybe some of them you really won't, but they are all really quirky, fun shirts. So yeah, do have a look on there. For me, it's like going to a sweet shop. It's amazing.
I would concur with that. That's it for our competition update. We'll round off the pod there for today and come back with another episode on Wednesday, the 17th of April. So we'll see you then.